නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So we were discussing several suttas recited by Venerable Sariputta. Till last time we have finished Maha Hattipadopama Sutta. We discussed several weeks, and then we discussed a sutta which is talking about the Bojjhangas, Vattu Sutta, how he is capable of controlling or kind of maintaining the Bojjhangas, enlightenment factors, as he wish. That also we have discussed. And today also I have taken another sutta which is related to Venerable Sariputta, and those are also quite interesting. And he's talking here also about the Parisamuppada. Actually, the discussion, this is actually going on as a discussion, and this discussion has taken place between Venerable Kottita. So Venerable Kottita is one of the foremost monks in the analysis. So this sutta is called the Sheaves of Reeds, Nalakalapi Sutta. Nalakalapi Sutta, the Sheaves of Reeds. And it's very interesting. And at one occasion, Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Mahakottita were residing at Isipathana Migadaya. You know that where Buddha delivered his first discourse, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. So that Isipathana Migadaya is the place that they were residing. And at one occasion, Venerable Mahakottita approached Venerable Sariputta and asked a series of questions. Actually, both of them are arahants, and they are asking questions not for their own understanding, rather for their kind of students or for ourselves. So basically, then this information, these questions are being recorded. And the questions are also very, very interesting and very valid, and there are possibilities that the doubts can arise if these questions are not properly answered. So therefore, Venerable Kottita often seems going and asking various difficult questions and very practical questions where people can go wrong, particularly from Venerable Sariputta, like in the Mahavedala Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. So this sutta is also talking about very interesting point and very, very important point. Now he's asking question one by one about the links of the Parisamuppada. You know that there are 12 links. Typically, they all are Parisamuppanna Dhamma. They all are conditioned phenomena which are subject to the conditionality, which are subject to that Idappaccetha principle, the Parisamuppada principle. Imasmin sati idam hoti imassu uppada idam uppajjati imasmin asati idam na hoti imassa nirodha idam niruddhati. When this exists, this also comes to be. With the arising of this also arises. With the cessation of this also ceases. With the passing away of this also passes away. So this is a basic principle, the very, very important principle, which is being satisfied by all the links of the typical Parisamuppada formula, what we know. Avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam, vijnana paccaya nama rupam. So we keep on going till the death and the lamentation and all that, the suffering, and all those actually we can say are the conditioned phenomena. So they are basically dependent on another condition. So now Venerable Mahakottita is going from the last end, which is more apparent. He's asking about Jara Marana, that is the aging and death. Kinnuko Auso Sariputta Sayankatang Jara Marana. So is aging and death created by oneself? O Parankatang Jaya Marana Jara Marana. Or is it created by another? Sayankatancha parankatancha jaramarna. Is it created both by oneself and by another? Udahu අසයංකාරං අපරංකාරං අදිච්ච සමුප්පන්නං ජරා මරණං. It is basically being fortuitously being created neither by oneself nor by another, kind of an accidentally, all of a sudden they are being created without any proper reason. So what is it properly? So these are the four questions that he is asking. Now jara marana is also a very practical point. So sometimes we go through aging process, we go through decaying process, and the death, all these are inevitable incidents that we all go through. And sometimes whenever we are going through such difficulty, probably we may attribute it to someone, we may asking someone's help to avoid any kind of issue, very much like the other person is very much like in control of that, expecting in control of that, thinking that they can control it, they can sort of have some blessing to avoid it. So we all want to avoid the death, and asking to avoid that death by an external force is something very commonly we can see. People go to various places, various shrines, worshipping places, and they are asking, okay, please try to avoid my death. I am going through some terminal cancer, so please avoid my death. So likewise, these things are very common. People are expecting some external force to handle their health, handle their aging, or handle their death, avoid their death. So all these things are very common. Now, the question that Venerable Kottita is asking, is aging and death created by oneself? Is it basically under the control of oneself? Or is it created by another? Is it happening because of the influence of another person? Is that person, is that omniscient person, a deva, a god, a brahma, who is the one controlling this whole process? Is it like that? Or is it happening because of both of these? There's a contribution coming from oneself and there's a contribution coming from the outside force. Is it happening because of this? Or is it happens fortuitously, without any reason, without any cause? It is happening by itself. So this is the question asked by Venerable Kottita. And then Venerable Sariputta, he basically denies all these. He simply say aging and death is not created by oneself, nor is it created by another, nor is it created both by oneself and by another, nor has it arisen fortuitously being created neither by oneself nor by another. So he deny all these four possibilities. Instead, he is telling, rather with birth as condition, aging and death comes to be. Birth is the reason, birth is the cause, birth is the condition. When birth is there, aging and death is possible. With the arising of birth, aging and death also is arising. If we are able to avoid birth, then definitely there can't be any aging and death. So basically, with that cessation of birth, aging and death also cease. So this is the basic principle that we need to understand. So now he repeats this whole series one by one. So you know that he is applying it to what you call the birth itself. Whether the birth is created by oneself, or is it happening because of someone else's force, or is it happened because of these both of these reasons, or is it happens fortuitously without any reason, without any cause, accidentally it happens. So how the birth happens. So similarly, Venerable Sariputta denies all these reasons what Venerable Kottita is suggesting. Rather, he simply says birth happens because of becoming, existence. Bhavapachya jati. So jati is not happening because of one's own conditioning or someone else's influence or both of that, or immediately as an accident without any cause. Rather, there is a cause, that is the condition of the becoming. the bhava, bhava paccaya jati. Now he is asking about the bhava, the existence. And then Venerable Sariputta says it is happening because of the upadana, the clinging. Then he is asking about the upadana. He says it happens because of craving. Then he is Venerable Kottita is asking about craving. Then he is saying it happens because of the feeling. Then Venerable Kottita asks, what's the situation about the feeling? Then Venerable Sariputta says it is happening because of contact. What is the situation of contact? It happens because of six sense bases. And what is the cause for six sense bases? Then Venerable Sariputta says it is name and form. Now we are coming to a very interesting area. So after we reach the name and form, now Venerable Mahakottita is asking, name and form, friend Kottita, is not created by oneself. So how name and form? Is it created by oneself? Or is it created by another? Or is it created by both by oneself and by another? Or is it happened because of fortuitously, without any reason? Then Venerable Sariputta say, it is happens because of consciousness. Consciousness is the condition for name and form. Vijnana paccaya nama rupa. Now another interesting point is that the consciousness. Now Venerable Kottita is asking, what is the situation of consciousness? Is it created by oneself, or is it created by another, or because of both, or is it happens accidentally, fortuitously? Then Venerable Sariputta say, consciousness happens because of name and form. Now, here there is a situation. Previously, Venerable Sariputta is saying, name and form happens because of consciousness. Now he is saying consciousness happens because of name and form. There is a cyclic relationship here. Now this is the important point highlighted in this particular sutta, because we are quite familiar with that typical order. Avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, vijnana paccaya nama rupa, nama rupa paccaya salayatana. That is the typical order that we all can remember. But often we forget the interrelationship between the consciousness and name and form. Consciousness conditions name and form. Name and form conditions consciousness. So that is highlighted here by Venerable Sariputta. Now Venerable Kottita is particularly asking about this cyclic relationship. So he repeats what Venerable Sariputta has mentioned. So when I ask the cause for name and form, you said it is consciousness. When I ask what is the cause for consciousness, again now you are telling it is a name and form. So how I can going to understand this? And then Venerable Sariputta is giving this beautiful simile. So that is the name of the sutta. So the simile of the bamboo reeds, there's two sheaves of reeds. And the interesting thing is, so he is taking bamboo reeds, two sheaves of reeds. So they internally they are hollow. There is nothing, there is no any inner core, any heartwood in the bamboo reeds. So it's internally it is hollow. It only has the outer sheath. And suppose they are also now very dry, and a person is gone to the forest and he want to find some firewood. Now he is cutting this bamboo reeds. Now he has two bundles. He has bundled them together, and two bundles are there. Suppose in the first bamboo bundle there are say hundreds of little these bamboo reeds. Another bundle there are another hundreds of bamboo reeds. Now how to keep it steady? So what he does is by leaning onto each other. So if one leans to the other leans to the other, previous one. So likewise, two sheaves of reeds might stand leaning against each other. So then Venerable Sariputta says, similarly, name and form as a condition, consciousness comes to be. Consciousness as condition, name and form comes to be. So one conditions the other. One helps the other. And in case if we were to remove one of these sheaves, the other also falls. If we remove the left side one, the right side one also falls. If we remove the right side one, the left side one also falls. So therefore, in case if we are able to avoid name and form, that means consciousness also falls. In case if we are able to avoid consciousness, name and form also falls. So this is the interesting point highlighted here, and this seems to be a very uncommon area, it seems. Now when Venerable Sariputta explained that, given this very interesting simile, Venerable Kottita is quite delighted about his answer and the explanation he has given, and he simply says, "It is wonderful, friend Sariputta. It is amazing, friend Sariputta, how well this has been stated by Venerable Sariputta." And we rejoice in Venerable Sariputta's statement on these 36 grounds. Now he is going to explain the 36 ground. So before we go into that, so the taking out of one bamboo reeds basically indicates cessation of either name and form or consciousness. So that means, so in case if we remove one bamboo reed, the other one falls. Similarly, with the cessation of name and form, consciousness cease. The cessation of consciousness, name and form cease. But you know, the name and form is the condition for six sense bases. With the cessation of name and form, the six sense bases also cease. The cessation of six sense bases, the contact cease. With the cessation of contact, the feeling cease. With the cessation of feeling, then the craving cease. With the cessation of craving, the upadana, the clinging cease. So likewise, this whole mass of suffering going to cease. So that is the Nirodha side, the cessation side. What we need to do is to cut off one of those two links, either name and form, either consciousness. If you are able to do that, the whole set going to collapse. Now, after the explanation, as I said, Venerable Mahakottita was quite rejoiced, and he want to praise Venerable Sariputta on 36 grounds. So these 36 grounds are also basically based on each and every link of the Parisamuppada. So in case if someone is talking about, now he is telling like this. So if someone is preaching Dhamma for the purpose of revulsion about the aging and death, so that means Nibbidaya, Viragaya, Nirodhaya. So this basically the revulsion, the cessation and the dispassion of aging and death. If someone is talking Dhamma, explaining Dhamma for this particular reason, for this particular purpose, then Venerable Mahakottita says, he is a speaker of the Dhamma. He is a Dhamma Kathiko. That bhikkhu is a Dhamma Kathiko. Now, in case this person, this monk, is basically not only he speaks, but rather he is trying to practice it, fading away and cessation, the disenchantment of aging and death, then he is not only a speaker, he is a practicing accordance with the Dhamma. He is a Dhammanu Dhamma Patipanno. He is practicing in accordance with the Dhamma. Now suppose someone has practiced it fully, and now he fully understood it, and his mind is liberated. Now he is actually the one who is sort of enjoying the fruits. Ditta Dhamma Nibbana Patto. Ditta Dhamma Nibbana Patto. He has attained Nibbana in this very life. So basically, he is the Arahant. He is fully attained. So he practiced it and then he has attained. So these are the three aspects. So one case is about the explanation. Basically, he is a speaker of the Dhamma. ධම්ම කතික the other one is the ධම්මානුධම්ම පටිපන්න who is practicing in accordance with the ධම්ම and the other case is where he has fully realized so he is ditta ධම්ම නිබ්බාන පත්ත in this very life he has attained nibbana so these are the three aspects with respect to aging and death so if someone is talking about aging and death and trying to convince others that to the abandoning of aging and death, revulsion of aging and death, disenchantment of aging and death, cessation of aging and death, he is a person who speaks Dhamma properly, he is a speaker of Dhamma, and if he himself is practicing, he is the practicing of the Dhamma, Dhammanudhamma Patipanna, and after practicing, assume that he has realized, and then he is the Ditta Dhamma Nibbana Patta. Now similarly, Venerable Kottita keeps on praising Venerable Sariputta, taking each and every other links, taking, say, before aging and death, so we have the birth, then the bhava, the becoming, then the upadana, the clinging, then the craving, the tanha, then the feelings, that is the what we call the Vedana. So likewise, each and every link he is taking. So altogether, he is coming till the ignorance, Sankhara and the Avijja. So altogether, there are 12. 12 into 3, now we have 36. Now, this is the way that Venerable Kottita is praising Venerable Sariputta for this whole explanation. And some similar explanation we can actually find at another sutta. So let's take this also here. That is called Nagara Sutta. Actually, Nagara Sutta and this, what we call the Nalakalapi Sutta, both are in the Nidana Samyutta. The Samyutta Nikaya talking about the causation. And here in this Nagara Sutta is actually uttered by the Buddha. So this is also a very, very interesting one. Here simply Buddha mentioned, okay, before I become enlightened, so I want to find out the reason why we will keep on coming to this birth, why we will keep on going through this aging process, and it will be subject to various diseases and going to die. So what is the way out of it? So I was wondering about it. I was contemplating about it. And so in that case, as Venerable Sariputta explained, so the Buddha also do the same kind of an explanation. He's saying, I wisely reflected, what is the cause for aging and death? Then I understood the cause of death and aging and death is the birth. Then I reflected, what is the cause for birth? Then I understood it is the bhava, the becoming. Then what is the cause for bhava, becoming? Then I understood it is the clinging, grasping, the upadana. Then I tried to reflect what is the cause for upadana. Then understood craving is the reason. Tanha is the reason. Then I tried to understand what is the cause for tanha, craving. After reflection, I understood it is the feeling, vedana. After reflection, I tried to understand what's the cause for feeling. Then I understood it is the contact, passa. Then I reflected and tried to understand what is the cause for passa, contact. There I got the answer as the six sense bases. Then I tried to understand what is the cause for six sense bases. After rice reflection, I understood it is a name and form, nama rupa. Now, once I understood what is name and form is conditioned, then because through careful attention there took place in me a breakthrough by wisdom, when there is consciousness, name and form comes to be. Name and form has consciousness as its condition. So vinyane ko sati namarupam hoti vinyana paccha namarupanti. The consciousness, vinyana, is necessary for name and form to manifest. With the arising of vijnana, consciousness, name and form comes to be. So Buddha also comes to that point. And then because it occurred to me, when vortexes does consciousness come to be? by what is consciousness conditioned. After careful attention, reflection, I understood name and form comes to be because of the consciousness. Rather, the name and form, because of the name and form, consciousness comes to be. Consciousness has name and form as its condition. Then because it occurred to me, this consciousness turns back. It does not go further than name and form. Now, his understanding, so the way that Buddha points it out, is very noteworthy here, where he mentioned consciousness turns back. Pachudavattanti ko idang vinyanang namarupamha. No parang gacchati. It does not go beyond. It's basically, it has a kind of a interrelationship. So name and form is conditioned by consciousness. Consciousness is conditioned by name and form. Ettavata jayetava jiyetava miyetava chavetava uppajyetava yadang namarupa paccha vinyanang vinyana paccha namarupa. It is to this extent that one may be born and age and die, pass away and be reborn. That is, when there is consciousness with name and form as its condition, and name and form with consciousness as its condition. Now, for birth to happen, so this cycle has to be in motion. So Venerable Katukundi Nyananda Sero often says it's like a whirlpool. So whirlpool is in between name and form and consciousness. It gathers momentum and then it develops, and then the birth happens, aging happens, all those different other characteristics are going to happen when this mobility or this process begins. So this cyclic relationship, the name and form and the consciousness begins, and that is the kind of very subtle cause causing the all other factors to come into be. And then Buddha summarizes telling, so with the name and form as condition, six sense basis as condition, contact, so likewise he explained the side. And there he understood, okay, this is the samudaya, this is the origination. Samudayo samudayo tikho me bhikkave pubbe ananusate su dhammesu. Chakkum udapadi, jnanam udapadi, panya udapadi, vidya udapadi, aloka udapadi. Origination thus bhikkhus, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, true knowledge and light. So we can see it's a kind of a revelation by the Buddha, a great understanding by the Buddha, and he is explaining this important point. So this is the samudaya, this is how the things originate. So there's interrelationship between name and form and consciousness. As a result of consciousness, name and form comes to be. As a result of name and form, consciousness comes to be. As a result of name and form, six sense basis comes to be. As a result of name and form, six sense basis, the contact comes to be, contact causes, feeling causes, craving causes, clinging causes, existence or the bhava, becoming causes, birth causes, aging and death, basically. So this is the samudaya side. Actually, in this sutta, in the Nagara Sutta, Buddha discuss about the cessation side as well. So I didn't put it here. So here actually Buddha keep on trying to reflect. So what is, how this cessation happens? Cessation of aging and death happens. There he say, okay, if we are able to avoid birth, it will happen. So with the cessation of birth, aging and death also destroys, so cease. So likewise he is keep on explaining. And after going through that whole process, he simply says, okay, this is the Nirodho. I was able to understand the cessation. This is the cycle of the cessation. So likewise, by Buddha himself, this point is highlighted. particularly the interrelationship between the name and form and the consciousness in this Nagara Sutta as well. And in the Nalakalapi Sutta, Venerable Sariputta also pointed out, as a result of the series of questions given by Venerable Kottita, and the interesting point is, so sometimes Katukulanda Thero, Jnananda Thero is used to explain this point often as the kind of crux of the problem. So we are keep on going in the samsara, and this is the crux of the problem. We are kind of a cyclic relationship is there between consciousness and name and form. Now the question comes, in case if you are able to avoid name and form, that means consciousness can't exist. So this is actually the consciousness, particularly dependent consciousness. So it is dependent on name and form. So this dependent consciousness can't exist when there is no name and form. So what we do basically using vipassana is to develop some understanding about this arising and passing away of various phenomena. It helps us to understand there is no inner core, there is no any self, and that the wisdom is being developed. As a result of that, slowly we are able to avoid any craving for name and form. Acchajji tanhang idha nama rupe. So Buddha sometimes mentioned, so one has to cut off the craving for name and form. So when something is reflecting in our mind, when there's a thought in our mind, when there's a sign in our mind, when there's a perception in our mind, what happens often is that we give some more life to that. We attribute a person to that. We attribute an object to that. So that is where we go wrong. We can't simply keep it to the mere reflection. We can't simply keep it to a mere thought, a mere sign. We are adding more and more things to it. We fabricate it. We attribute a person. We attribute an object. Then we go wrong. Then the cycle begins, then the cycle continues. We get tangled. But when we are able to thoroughly go through some vipassana process, one comes to the level, one has the capacity to look at what is really happening inside the mind and to understand how ignorance is causing some sort of a fabrication. So this fabricated environment helps consciousness to establish on name and form. So when name and form is there, so the consciousness has some kind of a footing, some kind of a home. But if we are able to wipe out the name and form, if we are able to erase name and form, if we are able to blur the name and form, because we are not craving for that, we are not adding any value to that, we are not attributing a person to that, then it simply ceases. It will simply fade away, it will simply become blurred, then the consciousness can't establish. Then the cycle stops. There is no person to die. There is no birth to happen. There is nothing in the mind which is representing. So we can say it is unestablished and it is very much like unmanifested. So that level often mentioned in the Dhamma has Anidassana and Appatitthita Vijnana. Anidassana Vijnana is the consciousness, the type of consciousness where nothing is manifested. Appatitthita Vijnana is where it is not find footing at any place. There is no any object to find footing. There is no any object to get established. So it is a kind of an objectless mind. There are no objects, there are no thoughts, there are no signs. We can say one is in the animitta, in the signless. One is in the sunyata, it's an empty mind. But empty does not mean kind of a negative, does not represent any negative connotation. Rather, it is representing some sort of understanding. Where one thoroughly have understood there is no being here. There is no self here. There is no any eternal soul here. What happens is a kind of a conditioned process when this is available, that there's another can be available. With the arising of this, another arises. So the moment we avoid this kind of a conditioning process, the whole thing ceases. Now one simply rest in cessation, we can say. The process does not begin. Mind does not grasp. Mind does not support any craving. So the mind is completely released, completely has become quite cleansed, pure. One can say one is enjoying kind of a pure consciousness. Okay, with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. Yeah. So we have questions coming from Venerable Dhammavijita.
Yes, Bhante, thank you for your teaching. I want to, could you explain what is name and form?
Good. Yeah, so actually we discussed that in the Samadhitti Sutta, yeah, in Manjama Nikaya.
Okay.
So there, Venerable Sariputta explained it as, it consists of five factors. Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasika. Vedana, the feeling, Sanya, perception, signs, Chetana, volition, Chetana, Passa, contact, Manasikara, attention. So these are the very, you know, the primary characteristics of the mind. It is not consciousness, by the way. So often people have kind of a confusion, because, you know, in the later, as we get into the, say, Visuddhi Magga, so there's a kind of a later introduction, because you know that there are five grasping aggregates, Panchupadanakkhanda, the form aggregate and feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. Now the form aggregate is actually the material side. Other four are actually arupa, they are immaterial. Right? So they are immaterial, and sometimes people name that also as, this is rupa, this is nama. That rupa is the form aggregate, nama are the other four aggregates. So they are, the consciousness is also included there. So there's a confusion then, actually. Right? Yeah. But in the suttas, in the early teachings of the Buddha, so there is no such categorization. So Buddha never said nama is the other four aggregates, rather name and form, nama rupa, is dependent on consciousness. Consciousness is dependent on name and form. So what is the name and form? The name there is the Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. Rupa is the kind of, say, the perception that you extracted from the physical Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayu. So the name and form has name part and the form part. So name part consists of Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. That is feeling, perception, volition, contact, and attention. So they are the very primary characteristics of the mind, the chetasikas. And the form part is actually the extracted sign coming from any other sort of physical phenomena. Now say, for example, someone has seen a flower.
Yeah.
Say he has seen a flower yesterday. But it's a very beautiful flower. Now he is at home. Now he can remember the flower. So while you are seeing the flower on yesterday, you have gathered some information from the flower. It is actually a physical one. Probably you have touched that, you smelled that, and then say you have seen that. So all that has happened. So as a result of that experience, you take certain, you know, signs of this flower to your mind. So later, once you come back home, you have certain perception about the flower. You have a kind of a mental image about the flower. And again, you have certain feeling about the flower. And maybe you like it. When you are feeling about it, you recall it, you remember it, you feel happy also. That's the type of feeling that you are having. Mm-hmm. And when you recognize the image, mental image of the flower, so there you become delighted about it. and you name it, oh, it's a beautiful, say, whatever, a lotus flower. So you name it, all that comes under the perception. And probably you now have an intention, okay, I better go and pluck that flower. I can offer it to the Buddha. There may be an even an intention currently arising.
Mm-hmm.
But flower is not in front of you.
Yeah.
So that is the flower yesterday you have seen. Mm-hmm. So with respect to the flower, the form part is actually the sign that you have picked from the flower. So whether it is petals are very soft, gentle, so you have a little perception about it. And then you have seen its color, you have perception about it, you have seen its shape, you have perception about it. All that helps to have that proper mental image about the flower. So that comes as the form part. The form and the name are now connect together. We call it name and form, Namarupa. So Namarupa is now reflected on the screen of consciousness. Consciousness is entirely a different thing. So this is the name and form. You have all that entities, Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Pasa, Manasikara, plus the extracted information, what you have seen yesterday, the form part, gathered sign of the form, that is there. So this is now ready. It is now being reflected on the screen of consciousness. Now you can, that's a flower.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That there was one point where I, you know, sometimes I've had the experience of noticing, like, I can see forms and shapes and everything, and that fits my consciousness.
Mm.
They're like fitting together perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Because the forms we see, then we perceive them.
Mm-hmm.
And we know them.
Exactly. Now, when we see through our naked eye in the present moment, so what actually we see is certain signs of the form.
Yeah.
Because the form does not come and hit the eye. Rather, certain light rays go and hit, and then they reflect, come back. And then it's generating some sort of image on our retina.
Yeah.
Okay, just again a retina, kind of a very image.
Yeah.
It's not the real object, kind of an image.
Yeah.
So that image, ultimately, we take it upside down and then we interpret it, this is so and so. This is so and so. So we are the ones actually name it. We are the ones who actually label it, attribute it as a person, as an animal, as a flower or whatever. So that whole recognition happens inside, internally, within us. So either they are, so for easy explanation, I have taken the past experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are talking a present moment experience.
Yeah.
Even the present moment experience can produce name and form inside the mind. And if we attach to that name and form, if we are attracted to that name and form, our consciousness get entangled in the name and form, get tangled in the name and form. Now you start thinking, now you start proliferating, all that can begins.
Okay.
Assume that you see, but it does not disturb the consciousness. You are able to retain the clarity of the mind. Then that's a different story. That is the ditte ditta mattam bhavissati. So that is the advice to Venerable Bahir. Once you see, just keep it to mere seeing. So don't go and think about it. Don't go and try to touch it, or write a poem about it, or you angry about it, or lament about it, or happy about it. But it's a mere scene. Just a mere action has happened. A mere activity has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, there is no object as such. And there is no person as such either in this sight. The one who see the object, there is no such person either. So that's the beauty actually here. Now what happens to us is, even sometimes we see there is no object there. It's kind of impermanent and there is no any intrinsic substantial thing there. Probably we can understand. Then who is the one who is knowing that?
Yeah.
That is I. So we attribute a person to here.
Yeah.
There Buddha denies it, or there is even no person here. That is called Dattarang na manyati. Dattarang. Dattarang is the person who is going through the experience. There is no such person as such. So mere experience is there, other than that, there is no person who is experiencing, or there is no experiencer. That's the most subtle point we need to understand. I mean, even though we are explaining that, so I myself see, okay, I am the one talking. I am the one explaining. So, you know, that sense of I is still within us. That's the area we need to work out.
Yes.
That subtle sense of I will be there till within us, till we attain the arahantship.
So yeah, and so in a way the mistake is that we attach an I to the name, the materiality, or
mm-hmm.
the mentality. That the thinker, the seer is an I.
It's exactly.
Me.
Exactly.
And the material form that we see, we think that's some object out there.
And it belongs to me. Oh, it is you.
Yeah.
I love you.
I want that. You know, yeah.
I am here, you are there, yes. And I love you. So I am and you are both are there.
Yes.
Oh, I hate you.
Yes.
Either way, in either case, I am here as a person, you are there as another individual. So we create both sides, we go wrong, isn't it?
Yes.
Both sides we go wrong.
So, and so we cling to consciousness, I guess we crave for consciousness as well, right?
Maybe conscious experience, yes. I like to see, I like to hear. I can't simply become dumb, so I want to experience something.
I've heard that we attach, consciousness is our, we use that as a way of saying that I was in the past and I'm now, that there's a continuum of my experience.
Mm.
That's how we experience ourselves as something that is continuing.
Correct.
It's a consciousness.
Mm. Consciousness plus maybe the memory also plays, you know, the perception plays a pivotal role there. Actually, these things can't be divided.
Yeah.
You know, in the Mahavedala Sutta, Venerable Kottita is asking this question: whether perception and consciousness, are they inseparable or are they completely separate things? And Venerable Sariputta himself say they are very much like inseparable. They are fairly connected.
And I guess you could also say that if you take out, the Buddha does say it. If any of these conditions of dependent origination cease, all the others cease as well.
Exactly.
So
yes.
So they're all interdependent.
Interdependent. Exactly.
And causing each other in an indirect way.
Correct. Yeah. So in case if you are able to avoid name and form, definitely the whole thing collapse. If you are able to avoid consciousness, the whole thing collapse. Or if you are able to avoid the sankhara, the fabrication, the whole thing collapse. Assume that you are able to keep your mind very quiet, very relaxed, not adding any kind of your own preferences.
Yeah.
Say you are simply keeping your mind very calm, relaxed, peaceful, not disturbing the process.
Yeah.
Then the whole thing start collapsing.
Yeah.
And you are not disturbing the process. And on the other hand, if you are having the wisdom instead of ignorance, if you are fully understood the whole process, you are able to understand the whole thing, instead of ignorance, if we have the wisdom, then the whole process also stops. So very different areas are there, as we previously discussed in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta. You can get into different areas. So you can attack one of these links, particularly.
Yes. And name and form just strikes me as being, that's our life. Becoming a being, being a conscious being that experiences things, that's name and form, isn't it? Isn't name and form human life or animal life?
Is also name and form?
Name and form.
So that's another explanation coming from Mahanidana Sutta. The Mahanidana Sutta, so Buddha simply say, assume that one is going through the rebirth cycle, rebirth process. And there is a name and form now being generated on the mother's womb. And the consciousness has to very much like establish there. Say here at another location, this particular consciousness arising and passing away using associating one type of name and form. and he passes away that there. So when that consciousness passes away, it will re-establish in name and form at another location. A new consciousness now arising, attaching to this name and form, this new name and form. He has let go of that past name and form. He has now established a new name and form. Now Buddha argues, assume that such consciousness hasn't come here. Such consciousness is not available here. Then what is happening to name and form? Then Venerable Ananda say, then it will simply die, it will simply, you know, there is no proper birth happens. So even after consciousness comes here and now they are arising and passing away related to each other, and at one given moment consciousness separates, then what happens to name and form? Again, it will not manifest or mature as a being, as a child, as a kid. So this name and form and consciousness are interdependent, and it continuously has to have that support in order for the proper birth to happen. So therefore name and form at that level, I understood, is very much like the fetal, right? That very
fetus
type of thing is very much like that, the also can be considered as a name and form. Now here I feel it's a little different. In the Parisamuppada, this is my understanding, I might be wrong, in the Parisamuppada here we are talking entirely a mental level.
Okay.
In the mental level, okay, the name and form is a kind of a mentality type of thing. So Vedana, Sanya, Vedana, Pasa, Manasikara, so these are chetasikas, these are mental factors.
Mm-hmm.
And consciousness is again kind of a mental phenomena. There is no any physical thing involved other than, say, all these things actually need some support coming from the body. That's obvious. But everything is very much like happening in the mental level. But during the rebirth thing, you have some physical and the mental participation, and both are necessary. I have this kind of a little difference between the Mahanidana Sutta explanation about consciousness, name and form relationship, and here what we discussed today with respect to the dependent origination, where the consciousness and name and form, they are interdependent. I feel they are talking two things, two areas.
Hmm. And Abhidhamma gets into, is that the more mental side of things?
What I understand is now later when it comes to Abhidhamma, so this name and form is further elaborated. It is not just 5 chetasikas, it's coming to 52 chetasikas. When it comes to the chetasika, you know, the area, the consciousness is also not a kind of a now typically in the suttas we are talking of 6 consciousness, 6 type of consciousness, the eye consciousness, yeah. Ear consciousness, likewise particularly the 6 consciousness are there,
yeah.
But in the Abhidhamma they are talking about 89 consciousness or 121 consciousness. It's more descriptive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pante. That's too much.
It's overflowing otherwise.
Yes. Maybe it's more simple than that.
That's
but
the thing.
If
you get into 2 explanation, that's confusing.
Yes.
That's what I like, the Sutta explanation. It is very much, we can say it is very precise, very aesthetic, and giving adequate type of explanation.
Yeah.
We can understand the whole process using that.
Yeah.
That's enough.
And just you have to find out on your own.
Exactly, definitely. Through your practice you need to see how these things are operating. Otherwise it's a mere explanation. Otherwise it's a mere theoretical explanation. Now all these things we have to properly understand through our own practice. Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Yeah. Any question from your side, Geshan?
Guru Acharnai Bhante, yes, there is a written question.
Right.
Let me read that. And then I also, I see one hand is being raised as well.
Right.
Joseph, so let me first read this, Bhante, and then maybe you can respond and we can give Joseph, the next, just got the feeling, so Teruvan Saranai Bante, just got the feeling that Nala Kalapa Sutra is explaining the Buddha's shortest teaching. Bahya Darujirya's teaching, according to yesterday's discussion, since actually we are trying to remove myself, which is actually not there, and there's a question as right. So maybe you can respond to that.
yeah, we can say so. So when the consciousness is entangled with name and form, the whole thing start gathering the momentum, and ultimately a self is created, a person is created because of the ignorance. So there is a fair amount of ignorance, and as a result of that we do the fabrication, and then the name and form and consciousness get tangled, get established, it develops the momentum. Now the six sense bases are into operation, and contact happens, feelings happens, crave, grasp, and you become someone. There is a person now. You become somebody. Now, in case if you are able to avoid this cycle, with the cessation of the, say, avidya, now the wisdom is operating, so no fabrications, mind is calm, relaxed, there is no tanglement between name and form and the consciousness, the whole series stops, collapse. There is no person. You can't feel a person there. you can't feel as an individual. A kind of a mere process is happening. So therefore, basically, Buddha has revealed this whole, process. How a person being manifested. How you feel as a person. How you feel as an individual. Because of the ignorance. Because of the craving. And as a result of the vipassana practice, how you are coming to a level, the mind does not grasp anything. Even though seeing happens, you are not manifesting as a seer. Even though listening happens, you are not, or hearing happens, you are not manifesting as a listener. Even though smelling, touching, tasting happens, you are not manifesting as a person. And even though thoughts happen, there is no thinker. So likewise, the mere processes are happening. Based on the processes, you are not manifesting as an individual, as a person. So if you are able to come to this, so that is a very good type of understanding. So actually, as yesterday's discussion highlighted, actually there is no person, but we are trying to confirm a person. We are trying to, or we are struggling to maintain a person, sustain a person. That is where the struggle. The moment we are going through this vipassana type of understanding, so we don't need such a person. We don't need to sort of feed such a person, because understood there is no such person. Things are happening due to causes and conditions. It's a matter of, you know, allowing things to continue. You know, till aggregates are there, let it happen. Very difficult, by the way. I mean, we can simply say that. But the moment you're being attacked, the moment you're being belittled, you feel the person. Okay, how dare you are going to blame me like that? So we can explain it very beautifully, very, you know, very philosophically. But still the, you know, that the misunderstanding is there.
Yes.
So that's why, I mean, so the path is necessary, the practice is necessary to further and further sharpen the faculties, sharpen our wisdom, so that ultimately even that subtle sense of I will be abandoned.
Could I say something,
Bhante?
Yeah. My first Zen teacher, he had a PhD, and he wrote a dissertation on dependent origination. And the book is called No Self. But so it's sort of like no the sense of self is replaced by dependent origination. Dependent origination is...
That is the teaching.
Without,
that is the core.
Without a self.
Without a
nature.
Cause, how this whole thing continues, isn't it? Now, the things are continuing, so but there is no person, then how it is continuing? That is the dependent origination.
Yes.
So that is the core teaching of the Buddha, as we discuss in the Mahathipadupama Sutta. Whenever Sariputta in a way points out, so if one knows the Dhamma, he should know the dependent origination. If one knows dependent origination, he knows the Dhamma. That's simple. So it is very much like the essence of the Dhamma.
It frees us from the sense of I, of suffering, the ignorance of I.
Yeah, I mean, in case if we are...
If we see it with wisdom, then we understand.
Correct.
There's nothing to cling to.
Correct. Correct.
As mine.
Yeah.
Mine, myself, I.
So we'll see whether we can do it.
Okay.
Yeah, we can come to Joseph.
Okay, let me ask to unmute. Joseph, you can unmute and ask your question.
Thank you, Geshan. Hello, Bhante.
Yep.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, please, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for your talk. I found myself definitely... to overthink this stuff and to get into too much details, and then readings, and then more in-depth readings, and more classifications and lists and all that, definitely I found takes it away. And to have a more simple practice is really, for me, has been really helpful.
Definitely. I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you, because I mean,
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, the too much detail also sometimes confuse the whole thing, and there also it becomes a burden to the mind. And some teachings are, you know, not connecting properly with another teaching, not telling properly, and then we get again confused.
Yeah.
That's why I mean, with respect to the information, also we have to have some sort of a limit. So if we feel that, okay, now these things are well connected and I can contemplate, and that is quite logical and yes, understood, and now we better get into the practice and see how these things are happening practically. Are we able to experience that? Are we able to understand that practically, experientially, through our applying it to our own mind? So that is the real experiment ground that we have to work on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, I was asking, I had the confusion between the name and form and the five aggregates.
Correct.
Which you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And I seem to have sort of passed through that confusion by, in a way, just putting it aside.
Right.
And not overthinking it.
Right.
And, you know, some interesting things I found, we did the, you know, sometimes... It's only a couple of weeks after the talk, like the talk that we have today. It might be a couple of weeks before I kind of really process it through the practice. So I'm going to go back to maybe the talk we had a couple of weeks ago on the seven enlightenment factors.
Right.
And I found that one very practical, very helpful.
Mm.
And I was able to sort of notice it definitely in that linear... like one leads to the next, to the next, to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, in the practice, I would maybe sit and there would be a lot of thoughts. There would be a sort of a bit of a confusion, you know, what am I supposed to do? But at the same time, I could recognize that the breath was really subtle. I was sitting calmly. So I felt that the mindfulness was intact. I didn't have any doubt that I was... in a mindful state. And when the kind of question of, you know, what is name and form, what should I be looking for, sort of ended, then I felt that discrimination of states, like the investigation, kind of fell into place. And immediately it felt kind of effortless. There was a rapture. I could feel the subtle sensations, and then a few, you know, moments later I would watch that and then see that there was a kind of more a subtle peacefulness gladness in the mind. I could feel after that, definitely happening in this linear process over the course of, say, 10 seconds, 13 seconds, half a minute between each stage. And then the, you know, the concentration, but it wasn't a concentration like an absorption. Like I realized I could open my eyes and I could be seeing everything, and the concentration wasn't broken, so I knew that I wasn't absorbed in anything. And then if I wanted to close my eyes again, I could close my eyes. And then the feeling of the equanimity, which I just kind of understood to be the absence of any kind of greed, hatred, aversion, any kind of a defilement, and to just be in that state. And then I kind of would still have that feeling of I'm the one who's aware. There's a kind of the awareness itself was in a way a bit of an agitation, and I kind of felt for a moment that I was like on the border of a silent, you know, space, but my awareness was kind of in a way like a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I was aware, I was kind of in this bubble, and it was a quiet bubble. There was nothing in it, so to speak, but I still felt that it was like a bubble next door to the silence. And that kind of persisted. Mm-hmm. And then there was a moment where I felt that I, in a way, I noticed that I seemed to have like blacked out, even though I was sitting. I didn't fall over or anything. I was there, but I realized I didn't remember what had just happened for a few seconds. Whereas up until then, I was definitely conscious and aware of each thought moment. There was a little gap where I realized I had been completely unaware, and so I reflected on that as maybe in that moment having been completely in the silence. I definitely felt refreshed. I felt super relaxed, like very peaceful. And then, you know, through the rest of the day, as I got up after that and went through my day, I found that, you know, whenever I was distracted or agitated by things, it was pretty minor. And it didn't take much whenever I felt a kind of, a desire, or I felt myself, you know, in ambitions and things like that, to kind of catch it and come back to a kind of a bit of a peacefulness. So I want to share that with you and see if you had any thoughts or comments on that.
Yeah, definitely. So now these are the kind of that we are reaching some sort of a crux of our practice, where the faculties are well sharpened, and so we are going to very subtle level of rising and passing away process. We realize that, so it gathers the momentum, the understanding, the wisdom, and at a moment that everything stops, everything is given up, the mind comes to the signless, no signs, no person, and we can say the cessation is touched. So, I mean, the objects are not now being captured by the mind or grasped by the mind. So mind has given up that, and whatever has arisen has ceased, and no more objects now arising. So mind is not interested of at all of anything. It's completely has given up, completely has relinquished. So then we can say, so one is simply experiencing the pure consciousness, without a person, without a being, without a self. So it's a very beautiful kind of an explanation that you have given. I think so we can promote this kind of things. So as we are continuing, probably to some extent, again and again, probably we can touch it. So again,
I
and
found
again.
That it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Sorry. I found, for example, like even with my daily practice, I've been a lot more casual with it, in a sense that, you know, when I wake up, I you know, I sometimes I'll do some walking, sometimes I'll go straight to the sitting. There's no, I have to do this walking for an hour.
Exactly.
It's just like, right now I'm going to walk, and then when the walking is kind of done, I do the sitting. And I find that I'm sitting now for like an hour and a half very easily. And it seems that in a way it's almost in the last 30 minutes that these kind of more, sort of sublime types of things seem to be happening.
Yeah. So actually...
And then after that, you know, things I find, like, I'm trying not to even, whatever I'm doing, to not even, like, to not guess what I'm going to do in the next second or moment, to just let it sort of see where I'm going, where, you know, I'm walking now, I'm going to walk into the kitchen, you know, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to, go over there.
Okay.
I don't even predict or think about what it is I'm going to do.
Correct.
I just sort of let it happen, and I found more and more that everything happens just fine. Like, there's no, it's not as if I sit around or I turn into a vegetable or nothing gets done. Everything seems to happens. To get done, and I feel much less.
So it's everything
burden.
Yeah, everything.
You know, there's no particular. Inner conflict about what I should do.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, to a certain extent, it's not perfect or anything. But definitely, I noticed that.
Correct. So that means there is no need to have Joseph.
Right? Yeah.
So everything happens without Joseph.
Yeah, and everything happens perfectly when he's not there. I mean, as soon as he shows up, that's where everything gets. It all turns into the same old story.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same old story.
Yeah.
Which shows up whenever he shows up.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like the same old records.
Yeah.
It's the same old, photo album. it's everything is the same old story.
Correct.
It's there. So it's a kind of, and you know, even all this stuff, you know, about, you know, the me, the not me, it doesn't seem, I mean, it's still there, but it's not a big confusing question about what does it all mean, I feel like I kind of know what to do, and I just got to sort of do it.
Correct.
And so it seems to be a little less confusion.
Mm.
And, you know, one thing maybe I'll just mention in closing, but I was thinking about this, the consciousness and name and form and their relationship, which I found was also a very helpful kind of concept or paradigm or thing to contemplate, this whirlpool of the two, and the idea of the reeds, you know, as in Nyanananda's Magic of the Mind.
Correct.
Like that.
Yes.
Like, stuck with me.
Mm.
And I kind of understood it because, you know, I'm a painter and I was doing painting lessons, and I talk about like the light, sunlight, which is like white light, but actually white light, if you pass it through a prism, is actually composed of a spectrum of colors, about six or seven colors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of maybe understanding it as the chetasikas, or the which are these, as you mentioned, the primitive mental processes, are like the colors which together make up the consciousness. You can't have the white light without the colors, and you can't have the colors without the white light.
Mm-hmm.
You can see them through a prism, like, differently, but one makes the other, and the other makes the one. They're kind of, that was kind of something that kind of...
Correct.
Me, and I found helpful in my practice to kind of resolve that as a bit of a conflict and find a little bit of peace through that resolution.
Hmm. Good. Now, basically, these are the areas that we can further and further reflect. So what is the amount of defilements we have? So how we are going through the today's, you know, daily course, and when we are moving with others, is there any kind of irritation? Is there any kind of, lust or any type of, say, jealousy arising, any restlessness arising in the mind. So these are the subtle
right.
defilements still we can try to recognize. And the other thing is, we may feel comfortable, we may feel quite relaxed when everything happens smoothly. But assume that things go wrong. Say,
right.
kind of someone disturbs you, someone scolds you, simply amuse you or belittle you. Or then how this whole thing, you know, the operates. So these are the, you know, difficult areas are the ones helping us to further understand whether we are thoroughly establishing the understanding or still it's very much in the surface level. So when things are happening smoothly, I can maintain a calm, relaxed state of mind. When things go wrong, still I get disturbed.
Well, that's very, very good advice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bhante. Thank
yeah.
you for your
yeah.
talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Tervan Sanai.
Yeah, Tervan Sanai.
Very good. Thank you, Joseph. And I don't think I have any other questions or anybody have raised their hands, but I have a question. So, Bhante, I'm going to share that.
Okay.
So, one of the things that with your Nandakalapa Sutra that you discussed today, Venerable Sariputta take a fantastic example. This is two bundles of bamboo sticks, and they are not just one items that they are balancing, but as like maybe a bunch in one group, and then a similar kind of a bunch in another.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a reason behind why a bunch?
Definitely.
The reason why I was thinking, maybe I'm drilling into it, or am I going in a rabbit hole?
No.
I can tell you.
Yeah.
But what's the reason behind that?
Yeah, definitely. There should be a reason, because one thing is he's taking the bamboo reeds, where
yes.
there is kind of a hollow inside. There is no inner core. There is no what you call the heartwood is there. That is one very, very important aspect that we can check in. And the other thing is, as you said, why he has taken a group as a bundle, not just one bamboo reed. So I feel one thing is that why he has taken, this is my understanding, so why he has taken a kind of a hollow bamboo reed is because, you know, the consciousness, name and form, all of these things are not a self. There is no inner core, there is nothing substantial in it. So everything is basically non-self. So everything is empty of a self. So that teaching is basically included by taking something of this kind of an example. And you know that in the Buddha, in the Penapindupama Sutta, simply Buddha say, okay, Penapindupama Rupa. So all this, whatever the materiality, even though it appear like solid, but it is like a form, F-O-A-M. Internally, there is no inner core, there is nothing substantial. It is like a form. The other thing I feel, why he has taken a bundle, because we are talking now aggregates, the feeling aggregate, perception aggregate, form aggregate, say formations aggregate, consciousness aggregate. Mm-hmm. I mean, for explanation, actually, we are talking consciousness and feeling and etc. But in reality, they are very, very minute phenomena, quickly arising and passing away. So what we experience is they are resultant, not just one minute consciousness, not just one minute name and form, but rather a series of name and form, series of consciousness, a bundle of consciousness, a bundle of name and form. Just to indicate that, I feel he has taken a bundle.
Excellent, and that is one of the reason why I thought as well, but I wasn't aware of the reasoning behind why he was chosen or what the bamboo sticks, but I really like your explanation and what you have given, because while you were discussing this sutra, and I was thinking about my upbringing and the relationship with me and my mother and the etc. what she had done to raise me. And everything, if I can sort of recall, and there is that name and form that I can think of, because there is still a connection. And that connection has that sort of something dear to you as well. And it's not just one aspect. There, within the maybe some scenario itself, I can sort of categorize multiple scenarios into it. And I was wondering, would that be the reason or something else?
Mm-hmm.
So not just the mother, you think about any type of relationships and then and etc. With your father, your brothers, siblings, and etc. And so you build these connections, and then you also have your names that you can sort of associate to it. And so I was thinking in that context.
Yeah, definitely. All our perceptions, all our past memories are not a single unit. It's a bunch. It's a bundle working together, and we are experiencing the resultant effect.
So the moment, going further with the question and the separation of this name and form and for it to exist or not to exist, the consciousness... We have this type of relationship, but we don't have the, it's kind of, you know, you have to have one thing to have the other. So it is always interdependent. And the only thing that I can think of, you know, maybe I'm thinking literally at this point in time, and so the separation of it.
Mm-hmm.
That can come only our consciousness disappears. Other than that, you will always have that memories and etc.
No, actually not a memory. Now say you are simply practicing Anapanasati. So you are able to keep your body straight, and now assume that the body is not much felt. You are simply feeling about the breath. And breath also start becoming subtler and subtler. And assume there are no thoughts. No, any kind of a mental image as such. Mind has also become very clear. And assume that you are coming to a level that completely breathing has almost has disappeared. Now, where are the consciousness established? So probably, I mean, at the beginning, if this happens at the beginning, there may be a perception coming and, you know, get tangled. There may be thoughts, doubts coming and you get tangled. There may be a floating kind of a blissful experience coming and you get attached to it. So likewise, there are such, you know, traps in the practice. But there may be a situation that you went through it, you understood it, you went through a fair amount of understanding the vipassana, and there even arising and passing away of a breath might be enough for you to land on the cessation. So you simply, breathing happens and you start experiencing something, and then it slowly fades away and it helps you to plunge into emptiness. Nothing is there. So basically your mind become completely clear, no name and form, and there's no conditioned consciousness either. Your consciousness is not established at any place either. And your mind is very clear. No manifestation of any image or any mental image, any thought at all. It's completely stopped. So there are, I mean, so at the beginning only things are very, very difficult. We don't know how to things get balanced, and we get trapped in various these kind of phenomena. So it's very difficult. But as we continue the practice more and more, so you become very much like familiar with the process. And that's why, as Buddha explained in the Mahasunyata Sutta, probably you can experiment with internal phenomena to achieve emptiness. You can experiment with external phenomena to achieve emptiness. Many, many areas are there. So you become very much like conversant about it, you become more proficient about it. So how to achieve it, how to reach there? Many different phenomena are there for you to reach there.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. And I have experienced sometimes, you know, the emptiness, and there are certain the certain type of sanyata. The moment I recognize it, if I look at that very carefully and without giving any other thoughts and just be aware of it, and the moment how it disappears, and then there is going to be some type of an empty space, and I see there is no thoughts get manifested for a while, and then it comes, and so yeah, it is through that practice as well. So I get it. Thank you so much. I don't have any other questions.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, then. So then I like to conclude today's Dhamma discussion and this Sutta teaching session. So I like to invite Venerable Dhamma Vijita to conduct the sharing of merits.
Thank you for your teaching, Bhante. And I'd like to share this, the merits. May our relatives and all beings share in the merit produced by today's teaching. May all celestial beings share in the merit produced by today's teaching. And may the celestial beings protect the Dhamma exposition and dispensation of the Buddha and his disciples for a very long time. And perhaps the seeds of the Buddha's teaching that have been planted in our hearts and minds may grow, producing path, fruition, and nibbana. I invite you to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses for sharing the merits. Ittavata chamhehi sambhatam punyasampadam. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Etta vatacham hehi sambhatam punya sampadam. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Etta vatacham hehi sambhatam punya sampadam. Sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasakta ca bhummakta deva naga mahitika punyam tangan moditva charam adganti sasanam. Akasakta ca bhummakta deva naga mahitika punyam tangan moditva charam adganti desanam. Akasakta ca bhummakta deva naga mahitika punyam tangan moditva charam adganti mangparam. Idambo nati nang ho tu sukita huntu nateo. Idambo nati nang ho tu sukita huntu nateo. Idambo nati nang ho tu sukita huntu nateo. Nimina punya kamina mame balas magamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yavane bana patia. Nimina punya kamina mame balas magamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yava nibbana patya. Imina punya kamina mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yava nibbana patya.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante, for giving us this talk, and Tunurvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Tunurvan Sarnai.